This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. With an unshakable belief that we are meant to get better with age, Dr. Helen Harkness teaches people how to capitalize on chaos and reinvent themselves and reinvent their careers. Her starting point is getting rid of the myths, or she calls it the crap, about aging and doing some soul searching and self-assessment. The final result is being crystal clear about who you are, what you want, and how the market can deliver it, and seeing yourself as a free agent. Dr. Harkness is the author of 4 books. The most recent 2 are Don't Stop the Career Clock and Capitalizing on Career Chaos. Dr. Harkness, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Brinke.
You have the only website that I've seen that says one of your goals is to be a centenarian, somebody 100 years or older.
Absolutely.
What motivated...
You know, the centenarians is the fastest growing age group in this country. And I see no reason why I can't be a centenarian. And I have an older sister. I have a sister who's 90, and she's physically very healthy. So we're on our way. I will say this, that we have to be very certain to take care of our physical and mental health if we're going to live long and die fast. I don't want to be sickly and spend 10 or 20 years in a nursing home. I want to be well and happy and go fast.
Call it being an energizer bunny on alkaline batteries, and that alkaline batteries not only last longer, but they keep up their strength until the very end, and then they just die suddenly.
Well, that's a good, I hadn't heard that. That's great. That's a great analogy. Well, as I said in one of my books, you know, we have these things that aging is supposed to automatically, you lose your brain, your health goes down the hill, you lose your creativity, and all of these things that you lose. And I have questioned every one of these, and my research backs up my questioning too.
Yeah, I love the way in the Don't Stop the Career Clock, you not only skewer the myths about aging, but you cite the research to back it up.
Absolutely. The research is sound. I am an extensive researcher. Especially when I'm looking for something that's really important to me, I will research it at great length, and I will synthesize research from every possible direction and from every clue. We have assumed so much negative stuff about aging, and it's not nearly as negative as we think. Absolutely not.
What would you say the biggest crap is about aging?
Well, I think the biggest crap about aging is the idea that midlife, your life should be over and you should go retire at 65. I tell people if we live right, we have at least 20 years to be highly productive after that. I tell people to grow old, to see themselves as old when they're 90 or maybe 95. I will continue to work what I do right now. I have set it up. I will continue to do my work probably until well into my 95. Peter Drucker worked right up until, I think he was, how old was he? I'm not certain. I forgot, 95, close to 100.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still working away. You could still get him on the telephone and talk with him, and he was still passing along important bits of information. And the interesting thing is that he and some other, about 4 other people, well-known people, and I think I wrote about this in the book, they were brought together to talk about where they saw the needs of the world going in the future, you know, the practical business and that kind of thing. And they came up with what they said that people really needed to look at. Now, these are the older people. We're talking about people who are labeled wise.
Mm-hmm.
These people were picked because they were wise. And everything they concluded on this study had to do with human nature. It did not have to do with technology. It had to do with where we had to keep on learning and meeting new challenges, not just technology challenges, but people interaction, human challenges.
But I disagree with you on something you said. When you said, well, maybe 95, I think we should never put an age on it. That's the same trap as just pushing
well,
the
maybe that's true.
The age
never
a little.
See yourself as too old, huh?
Use the phrase in your book, on retirement or non-retirement.
Right.
What do you think
right.
retirement
well,
is, anyway?
You know, I tell people what we may do, we may change careers. We may have done something for 20 or 30 years. We don't want to do it anymore. Maybe we're just tired of it. Maybe it disappears and we can't do it anymore. So we have to pick another career. And much of my work is helping people pick that second or third career to go into. And the most important thing, Dr. Brinke, that I tell people is this: you must find a purpose that you can pursue with passion and a plan until you, as long as you live. You may not do it this way, but you may. I may not run my business until I'm 97, but if I live to be 97, I will continue doing what I'm doing right now, but it may be in a different format. But I will continue with the same purpose. All kinds of research now is saying, you know, all the positive psychology and all of that research that's going on right now is saying that people are happiest and live longer whenever they're pursuing their authentic strengths. What are the things that they really do well? What really has a purpose?
Yeah, I think the real definition of old is that you don't have a purpose anymore.
I think that's true. You fold your hands and wait to die. I will never do that. I will never do that. And this is what I teach my clients, that we have been in a society that these were the rules. Here were the rules. You followed these rules. And you were, quote, successful. So people followed definite certain rules. All we had to do, we had to get a degree. We had to go into a company. We had to do what they said for 40 years. And then we had to go home and wait to die. If you were male, that's what you did. Females, I was from the silent generation. I was told, okay, and not by my parents, but by the culture, that I was supposed to marry a man with potential and help them to develop their potential, and I was to take satisfaction from the reflected glory.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yes.
Well, that's what the silent generation was to do. And I did that for about 18 years, and I decided that was not enough. I sent a husband to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine, except it wasn't enough. So I had to get out after being a housewife and a mother. I had to get out after about 18 years and get on my own, which was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, I'm going to back up a bit. A lot of people, when they think of career counseling or career coaching, they have this image of it's like Match.com. You take a test and then you look over some job possibilities and, oh, I like that one. That one's a good fit. But part of what you're saying is that, particularly if you're over 50 or so, the process often needs to start with examining the crap about aging and really rethinking how you feel about aging, and then rethinking careers. And as you were saying, part of the crap about careers is that it's this linear process of a career track, and it's much more reinventing yourself every several years.
Absolutely. When I talk with people about finding, you know, they come to me and they don't know what they want to do. They want to change careers or they want to alter. They want to go in a different direction. I do tell people very carefully that this is not a primrose path. Many people have worked very hard to be very successful in a different career, and maybe that career didn't fit. So they have no idea or very little idea of what they do like, what they don't like, and what they fit. They must take time to really discover themselves. What I call it in one of my books, their authentic self. Because most of us, many people have assumed a role that we thought we were supposed to play. And this authentic self must be tapped into before we determine our next career. And a lot of people would like a quick fix answer. The biggest problem, and I've helped hundreds and hundreds of people change careers, but the biggest problem is if you jump into a career without really researching it to find out what it's all about. I have people determine what are their glass balls? What must they have? What must they have to feel successful? It all relates to what's important to them. It relates to their meaning magnet that I have them come up with. That's the thread that goes through everything that makes them feel good. If they haven't stopped to even think about that in the past, it takes time to figure it out.
Okay, I'm going to slow you down. Back at authentic self, since a lot of people may not know what that is, that came out of Martin Seligman in Positive Psychology. Could you explain what authentic self means?
The authentic self is a definition of who you really are. When you look at yourself, who are you when you strip away all of the shoulds and oughts, and this is something that your nature, what are you really tied to? For instance, let me explain. My authentic self, I am a grower. That really is a teacher, but I'm a grower. I want to see people grow. I want to see people develop their potential. I'm obsessed with that. Once I recognize that, I could get it in the right place. One of the reasons I sent a husband to medical school was because he had tremendous potential. And boy, I was really helping him flourish his potential. What I do for a living now is people pay me dearly to find out what they really ought to be doing with their life and their career.
So you get an authentic self with questions like, what would I do if money weren't an issue and I was just doing
absolutely
what I love?
I tell people there are four key questions. I'll go over these briefly. The first question, and I ask this every time they come, I say, what is a need? You look at the world you live in and where you are, and what is a need that you relate to? What needs to be done now or in the future? This is a need. Then you ask yourself, do I have the skills to meet that need, or could I get them? Could I get the skills to solve that problem or fix that need? Third question is, would I value doing that? Would that be important to me? And then the fourth question is, can I make enough money to live on? Those are the things, but if you go through those and you keep doing things that don't matter to you, and I do tell my clients this, you can be in the workplace and you can be getting all kinds of accolades for things that other people see that you do well. You know, they tell you how great you are at something. And I'm very serious about this. If you see this, if you do not value what you are doing, if you think it's mindless and a bunch of crap, it will have a very negative impact on your self-esteem. You will feel like a fake. So that's opposite the authentic self. You get praises for it, but you privately know it's worthless. That's when you really are in pain.
And it just chews up your health. I worked with so many people that say, oh, I just 10 more years and I can retire. And I'm thinking, 10 more years, you're going to have a heart attack, you know?
Exactly. I don't think people recognize how being caught in a career or a job that stresses you out totally is like suicide almost. I have many lawyers for clients, and they're in big law firms, and it's killing them. I had one woman, and she was very successful, but she was in this, you know, they work 70 hours a week in some of these big law firms. She'd been there 9 years and she had gained 90 pounds, and then her health got so bad she had to get out, and of course now she's in recovery. And incidentally, she is running the family farm now. They have a big farm, and she's running the farm and starting a winery. that became very important to her.
In my professional experience, I think attorneys burn out quicker than any other profession. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, but I tell people, the process of changing careers, you have to know yourself. You have to know your authentic self. You have to know what your strengths are based on your past experience. And your past experience could go all the way back to when you were in the third grade. It doesn't have to be work experience. You can go back and assess yourself. But then you must go research. First of all, we look inward carefully at clients. Then we look and we come up with those glass balls. They come up with a list of their glass balls.
Okay, let me stop you there. The glass balls are the things that you just don't want to compromise, that it's so important to you that
you have to have these. You have to have these. And one of the things that I have, one of my glass balls is, I want meaning and money. In other words, I want meaning first. I want to do what gives me meaning. Then I need to make a decent living. I don't want to be old and poor. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I want purpose and profit. That's what I would say. When I was teaching in a university setting, it was ceasing to have the meaning that I thought it was should have, because actually I thought universities were about 20 years behind the needs of the adults that I was working with.
Mm-hmm.
And also you couldn't make enough money to support my children. So that's why I started my own business. So you look inward, you get those glass balls. Those glass balls, that list, becomes your written prescription for what you're looking for out in the workplace. And I help people determine, you know, three or four career options that might be a good match.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start researching them systematically to see how they match. In the last book, there's a blank form in there, and we show it. I know it's in the last couple of books. And you actually go down, and on a scale of 1 to 10, you make a judgment of how much this career you're looking at is going to match that glass ball.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you want to do is to jump into another career when you don't really know what you're getting into. You know, we don't want that to happen. So it's looking inward at yourself. It's looking outward at the reality of what the career situation is. And then it's looking forward to say, this is what I'm going to do. This is where I am going.
I want to take you back on some of the aging crap.
Okay.
You mentioned a wonderful quote from Maggie Kuhn in which she talked about, we don't want older people to be thought of as wrinkled babies, and not even as seniors, but elders. Do you like the term elders?
The term elder? I don't mm-hmm. object to the term elder, but I, you know, it's as long as they don't use it in the term elderly. I don't like elderly.
Okay.
Now, I don't mind being an elder, but I'll tell you one thing that I ask. When I get a client and they come to me and they think they're aging is going, you know, the fact that they're 57 or 60 and they think, oh, I can't do that because I'm too old, I'm this. The main question I ask them is, what would you do if you were 20 years younger? What would you do with your life? You're in this situation right now and you tell me you're 57. What would you do if you were 37? Knowing what you know now, and having had the experience, what would you do? And you know, it's interesting. Many of them can come up with some really good answers, but they had totally closed that down because of this false assumption of aging. And so we are going to live 20 years longer. We are going to be healthier 20 years longer because of all the things that's happening in the health field. So for us to use the same model and system of thinking is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, it's full of crap. So deduct. Every time I go out to give a talk, somebody will sidle up to me and say, Dr. Harkness, will you tell me how old you really are? And I say, certainly. 50. I say, if you can find anybody 50 years older that does more than I do, then we'll talk about chronological age. Meanwhile, 50 is my functional age. Let's go with that.
Mm-hmm.
So the chronological age versus the functional age is really a critical thing to think about.
I think of myself as 21,
and
I've just had that 21st birthday many times.
I'm serious about that.
I am too.
We have to be careful what we've been conditioned to think. And everybody that goes... Now, I will tell you this. There's a grief process, and I talk about this in my books. Changing careers and realigning your career is not easy. It's not easy. As I said, it's a challenge. But one of the things we have to recognize is countless people, millions of people right now, are going through a grief process of having to turn loose of what they assumed was reality. This is the way my life and my work is going to be. All of a sudden, that has been shot full of holes and nothing. There's a grief process that you go through, and you have to be careful. When you go through that grief process, I have a model that talks about the 5 F's of failure. When you're going through the grief process, you can go through that process. For instance, one of the things you can do is you can try to stay in the same thing and fight it out without making any changes. These are the 5 F's of failure. You can take flight where you run to something else. You don't know what you're doing, but you're just doing something. You can freeze and fret where you do nothing, or you can try to forget it. That's when you eat too much or drink too much or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can face it. This, I've got to face the reality, and then you get on a learning curve about yourself and about how the world's changed and what you have to do differently. Does that make sense?
I think it's a very tight analogy that it is a grieving process, and most of us hate change. We're talking with career expert Dr. Helen Harkness. Her most recent books, her third book is Don't Stop the Career Clock, and her fourth and most recent book is Capitalizing on Career Chaos. Her website is career-design.com. That's career-design.com. And Dr. Harkness does 3-day intensive workshops and assessment and coaching, and you're based in the Dallas area. But I suspect you have lots of people travel to Dallas to go to your workshops and get your services.
Yes, I do have clients from all over the country. I do work with clients at a distance, but on the other hand, I do like to meet them and do like for them to come and see me one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine after I just do better when I see somebody and interact with them personally, and then I will... We can do the things on the internet and on the telephone, which we do.
And what I think is unique about you is you have just a much more in-depth understanding and emphasis on dealing with age issues and dealing with who you are, almost like a psychologist, whereas I see so many career counselors just skip right to the match process. And I wanted to comment on your two books. To tell the truth, I like Don't Stop the Career Clock. That was my favorite of the two recent ones. First half of it or so really very nicely skewers those myths about aging and nice research documentation, and then a nice 7-step process in the back for building a new career. We'll get back to Dr. Harkness in a minute, but first a word about how to help your organization. Note how old you feel now. You will soon feel a lot younger after hearing Dr. Bricky. That's how I'm usually introduced when I give a keynote address. We are brainwashed with limiting beliefs about aging. As America's preeminent anti-aging psychologist, I bring good news for a change. A change in how you view aging, and I do it with a good helping of humor. In short, I help audiences learn the mental game for living longer, healthier, and happier. But I'm not satisfied with people just acquiring information and having a feel-good time. I have people adopt healthier beliefs on the spot and lock them in for lifelong benefits. I also like to stay and do breakout sessions, consulting, and individual coaching at no additional cost. When your organization or business needs a speaker, have them check out my demo video at anti-aging-speaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. And give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. And now back to Dr. Harkness. The capitalizing on career chaos, if I understand it correctly, is really about people who are getting stuck, people who really need to look at the myths and the pitfalls and are having difficulty coming up with that authentic self.
Right. The main thing I was trying to communicate with the chaos book is, and this is not, okay, when I talk about this, I am not just talking about a vague idea, because I have researched the theory of chaos and complexity. And I counted my bookshelf the other day, and I had 71 books on the theory of complexity and chaos. Now, I will be very
honest. Was the bookshelf a mess?
I don't understand one-tenth of what's in those books, because it is a mathematical physics theory. But it is now invading. It is coming into the humanities, and it's being used in many other things because it is a basic concept. 5 to 10 years from now, everybody's going to know about the complex, the theory of complexity.
It'd be like
now
Einstein.
They look at
yeah.
me like I'm some kind of a nut. But anyway, the theory of complexity says that the chaos that, and I know what I'm talking about here. The chaos that rips apart the former way we've been doing things, the expected way. The chaos is really the first step forcing us to create a better future, a better way to do things. If we jump on it, it's opportunity. Now, I'm not saying it's easy opportunity, and I'm not saying it doesn't have pain, but it... So if we look at the chaos that we're experiencing in our life and career and we say, okay, this is a signal that the former way is not going to work, I'm going to have to create a better way, then we can get busy, we can get through the grief process faster and start moving on. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, sure.
And this is not just a pie in the sky analogy I have. It is well researched. Prigogine, who was an Austrian physical scientist, and he taught at the University of Texas part time. He won the Nobel Prize, I believe it was in 77 or 78. I've forgotten. I've got it in my book, for what he called the theory of dissipative structures. And the theory of dissipative structures is simply what I was telling you. He said, something dissipates, falls apart, and a new structure comes up. We're in that process right now. And if we can see that, then we stop acting like we've personally done something wrong or somebody's personally done us bad. We can get beyond and move ahead.
I don't think you have to understand chaos theory in order to appreciate that you periodically need to just... take it all apart and rebuild it, and you end up with something that works better.
Yes. The one thing, all of my clients who go through this process of re-careering and moving forward successfully, there's one thing, most of us carry something with us that we have to turn loose of in order to move forward. There's something that we believe or hold to or whatever, an unconscious thing, that I'm not talking about deep psychological stuff. I'm talking about just something that we do without thinking, and we have to turn loose of it before we can move on.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody will identify, my clients will identify to that. I tell people, I assumed, now I came from this, you know, from the silent generation where you listen to the rules and you follow the rules. And one of the things that I had to turn loose of in order to move forward, I thought, and this sounds silly, but I thought that everything you started, you absolutely had to make it work. You could not turn loose. You could not have a failure on your record the most freeing thing that I found that let me move forward in my life was saying there are times and there are things that are no wins. Turning loose of a no-winner and moving on is not a no-no. It's something that you can do.
And I see one of the most common places where people get hung up is they say, well, I can't do marketing or I can't do sales.
Right.
And yet if you're inventing a new career, oftentimes it's not going to work if you're not doing sales, if you're not doing marketing. And to use the automobile industry as an example, I think the only reason Chrysler was saved the first time was on the strength of having a leader who, namely Lee Iacocca, who went out and really sold the company and
right.
inspired. And I look at the leaders of the big three now, and they're kind of hiding behind their suits.
Right, right. Well, there's something that, you know, it's interesting. There's something when we make major changes, there's something we've been doing to ourselves that once we lighten up on it, now when I have something that I try and it doesn't work, I say, well, what lesson did I learn? I don't do it twice. I try to learn from mm-hmm. the first failure and move on. But a lot of people carry their failures with them. We're fearful.
I want to emphasize the things that you uniquely do so well. And again, one of them is how you think about aging. I think what Maggie Kuhn was trying to get at with the idea of elders was that we really do get wiser. People think of as we get older, you know, we're kind of damaged goods, and how do we put the Band-Aids on it as best we can so that we can still do okay? And instead, we should be talking about how as we get older, we have talents that younger people don't have. We have skills, we have creativity that younger people don't have. And there's a lot of research supporting that, isn't there?
Well, we're talking about wisdom, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that, you know, when we talk about what is wisdom, when we put, it's a kind of a rare combination of maturity and intellect and experience, if learning, and all of these things kind of profoundly, you know, compassion, all these things kind of put together, that's wisdom. But let me tell you an experience I had. When I was writing this book on Don't Stop the Career Clock, and I was checking out wisdom because I said, you know, we're supposed to be able to have wisdom, and I want to define wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the I think I talked about this. I went to the book Psychology Handbook that had all of the main articles and things like that, and it came out in 19 and I think, don't hold me to these dates, but about 1990 or 94, something like that. And it had one article. Now this is the Psychology of Aging book. It's called The Psychology of Aging. It had one article on wisdom. And then there was a short paragraph in another article. That's all it had on wisdom. And I thought, well, that's weird. So then I found out that they had a newer version of it, a newer version, Psychology of Aging. So I immediately bought it because I knew it would have a lot more on aging. Let me tell you this.
It didn't have anything on wisdom?
Didn't have anything. The article on aging had been deleted. Now, Sternberg came out with one on wisdom after that, but there was not one book in that thing on the psychology of aging. And when I gave a speech to a group of students on this at a university, I told them this. And, you know, I was questioning them about, you know, what is wisdom? Who do you know that's wise? And that kind of thing. Because I was curious. If they did, you know, if they had a negative feeling about aging, they don't want to age, but if you're not going to get any reward, if you're not going to be given credit for being wise, then I can see why that, you know, why young people wouldn't want to be. We need to do more with the concept of wisdom.
What is your understanding of what wisdom is at this point?
I think it's a very rare combination of how we act and how we understand how much compassion we have for people. My mother was the model of wisdom, in my opinion. And her motto, the one thing that we had to remember was, and I remember it more and more, don't be judgmental of others. You haven't walked in their shoes. That was her favorite thing. Don't judge people because you haven't walked in their shoes. Let God judge. You just help people. Now, I'm not saying that's what everybody should have, but that's the wisdom. That was the wisdom my mother passed on to me.
So it sounds like it comes from a collection of good character traits as well as being a lifelong learner. And you have to have both.
We select certain things that are important to us, but it goes back to knowing your authentic self. You're not going to feel wise ever if you feel like a fake or if you feel like you've lived a fake life.
So the third piece then is being very in touch with who you are and what your values are while at the same time not being too judgmental about it.
Exactly. Exactly. And if I can come up with a better definition of wisdom, go back and really do some in-depth research on wisdom. I love to take a subject and find everything that's been written about it and make judgments on whether or not I agree with it.
If you do, let me know, because it's a very neglected subject.
Wisdom is we're getting this older society and we're supposed to be wise. Now, let's define exactly what that is. Let's do that.
And I think part of this comes from psychology has looked for what's measurable, and the IQ test and those kind of aptitude tests have emphasized the things that young people do well because it was geared toward school success. And we're not doing much measuring of the things that work better as we get older. And I think not even being able to define wisdom is a good example of that.
Exactly. If we don't know where we're going, we're liable to end up someplace else. I guess that's from Alice in Wonderland, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Any road will take us there if we don't know where we're going. What is the pathway to wisdom? Maybe we should write about the pathway to wisdom, since so many of us are going to be, hopefully, getting wise. I'm wondering about that.
This is your next career as being
a
wisdom expert?
I'll make a look at it.
When you do workshops and when you counsel or coach or mentor people, do you have ways of getting them to realize that as we get older, our abilities at leadership and creativity and entrepreneurship can often get better?
Yes. Let me tell you this. I am very honest about the shifts and changes that I made in my life from the age of 40, like 42 on. And I'm very upfront with my clients, and I tell them the stories about the shifts that I have made. Key thing in getting them to believe it is for them to see me as being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? I'm very careful not to pretend that I'm good at something that I am not good at. I let them see my weaknesses as well as my strengths. I let them know I'm very good at certain things, but don't take me as a model on everything.
And I think part of what you reveal, too, is the pain that you've gone through in reinventing yourself more than once, and particularly when the marriage wasn't working and your house burned down and, it was the darkest hour.
I've been through, there is not probably a 24-hour period that goes by that I don't thank my maker. I'm serious about this. That I don't thank my maker for all of the chaos, and I went through lots of it, when I divorced my husband and gave up. I had 3 children to support. I had no money. My house burned to the ground. I had no job, and I was trying to get a PhD. And it was the most chaotic time, but I will tell you this. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. If I had stayed in that marriage under those circumstances, I'm not just saying this idly, I would have been dead by now.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been dead by now. The way it is right now, I won't be dead probably for 20 years. So what I try to tell people is that we get stronger as we get challenged. And that's what I'm trying to help people to understand right now in the place we are. I'm not telling you that it's easy. And I don't tell them that there's not some pain involved, but we keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my main message.
So consequently, they don't see you as coming from an ivory tower, but coming from the real world.
No, they have no ivory tower. And frequently, I get clients who have come on the surface. On the surface, they have had an extremely successful career. They have made money. Everybody admires them greatly. But they have not been happy, and they are really desperate to do something else that they see mm-hmm. as important. I have a man right now. It's interesting. He's fascinating. He owned a group of franchises, McDonald's franchises. He was very successful in them. He had made, you know, he did all the things, the work that it took, very successful. And then he had something happen personally. His brother died. And I think it caused him to think. Well, he sold his franchises, and now he had almost no college whatsoever, but he's a very bright man. And he has written a book, which we're working on getting published, on management. Well, now he is managing, right now, a major nonprofit organization in this area. It's a very high-level nonprofit management job. Now we're working on, we need eventually, one of these days down the road, he will be a college professor as well as probably doing some consulting. He will be teaching young people how to find meaning and how to get results in what they do, because he does know how. Does that make sense? His lack of a degree, his lack of whatever, he's extremely serious about working with young people later on.
And one of the beautiful things about being alive today is, I mean, people used to wear out at about 60, and now, you know, you can be 100 years old and still be very sharp and vital and working. So you've got a...
We start wearing out when we, in the latter part of our years. Old age now is, you know, maybe 2 years before you die.
You've got a chance for several careers. I counted, I've had about 10 different careers. Part of what is going on now is that a lot of times, and I haven't seen anybody write about this, is simultaneous careers, that so many of the jobs require that you not just be, you know, a CEO or something. For example, I look now and I'm a professional speaker. I'm still doing clinical psychology. I'm doing, you know, coaching. I'm doing writing and publishing,
right.
Hosting a radio program.
Right.
Each of those is a career path in itself, and yet they feed on each other and reinforce each other. And I see more and more jobs becoming that.
This is really one of the pleasures. I wrote a book early in the 90s on changing careers, telling people to change careers. And when I wrote about that book, you know, if a white male especially talked about changing careers, there was something wrong
mm-hmm.
with them. Now we change careers, we integrate, and the barriers between these opportunities, as you have just said, have dropped, and you can move from one to the other. You can do all of them at the same time. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
You can come up with your own. It's what works for you. What is the need out there? And what do you want to do? And you can draw your own picture, if that makes sense.
Right.
And I have people, when they come in to see me, I have them, as we work together, there's one page, and everything that comes out that's important to them. Like, as you said, I had a young woman in here this morning, very successful Hispanic, and she is really good with numbers. But she doesn't want to be an accountant. She was an accountant in the past. She's now in public relations. She wants to write. She wants to be in politics. She wants to do a certain amount of business. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And we put all of these things down, and then we say, what career is going to give you the opportunity to do most of these? If you can't do them in your career, then you do them in your personal life.
Yeah.
Since I'm a grower, I grow trees. I have 10-acre yard, and it had one tree on it about 30 years ago, and now it has about 700 trees. And I've planted every one of them. I don't do it for a living. I don't want to sell my trees. I don't want to know all the names of them. I just want to grow them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at these things and do them, do the things that are important to us.
You know, when you said it used to be something was wrong with you if you were changing careers, you know, back a few decades ago, to me it's analogous to divorce. Back in the 40s and 50s, if you got a divorce, especially a woman, something was terribly wrong with you and you were looked askance upon. Now it's just normal and common.
Right, exactly. Changing careers, as I said, you know, the reason I got into this originally was because in 1970, I read Toffler.
Mm-hmm.
I think I told the story about it. I had an English class I was trying to keep awake, and they were all sleeping on me because they'd been smoking pot all night the night before. But anyway, trying to keep them awake. So I went to the bookstore, and I had read a review of Toffler's book and on Future Shock, and I bought a bunch of copies. And I took that class through Toffler's book. We read it together. And when he said we'd be changing careers 3 to 5 times, I said immediately, that's a bunch of bunk, that'll never happen. And then I began to realize that I was in the middle of a career change myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I started research. My dissertation is on this subject, because starting originally from Toffler's thinking, and I went out and researched careers. And I will tell you this, when I started my business in 1978, now I had done it, I got a grant and did this in our library for about 3 years, but when I started in 78, you could not get in the Yellow Pages under the word career. It did not exist in the Yellow Pages. So I try to tell people, when you see something that needs to be done, you may be on the front end of it, and you may do, you know, that's important to still, don't let that stop you. You may not have much support. But I do tell people this, people who are pioneers, I'm always called a pioneer in the career consulting area. People who are pioneers are so busy creating things that they don't stop to make the money. So pioneers have to remind themselves to make the money. It's the generation that comes after the pioneers that capitalize on what they learn from the pioneers, but they also bring a different dimension to make the money. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what Baker described in when he came up with the idea of paradigm shifts.
Yes, yes. I also tell people this, that if you're doing something that you do not particularly value, if you've got sidetracked on it, if I had started a big company and if I were having to do managing people and all that kind of thing, if I had done that, when the problem started, I wouldn't have the commitment to keep at it. I would be thinking, well, good riddance. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
But If you're doing something that you really value and it's important to you and it's challenged, you know, there's all kinds of chaos out there, all kinds of things dropping out. If you're really committed to it, you will be one of the few people who survive in it, because you'll think of new, you'll be so committed that you'll think of a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
And when you said the pioneers don't make money, that making a lot of money may or may not be a criteria for some people.
May not be a part of their criteria, right? So we have to think, we have to make these judgments, but if you're really committed to something, you'll do what it takes. You will do what it takes if it's a sound thing you're committed to and you've researched it and you know it. I tell people you have to know what you want, based on what's inside you and what's outside, what's the reality of what's happening. know what you want. You have to ask for it effectively. You have to know how to ask for it and get it. And you have to know you deserve it. You're not going, if you know you deserve it and you know it's there, you will do what it takes to get it. Does that make sense?
That's...
Even the shyest of people, I've had them happen that I never thought they'd get that assertive. And they got assertive very soon after they really knew this is what they wanted.
It's good advice from the cure for future shock when it comes to careers, career expert Dr. Helen Harkness. Her two most recent books are Don't Stop the Career Clock and Capitalizing on Career Chaos. The website is career-design.com. That's career-design.com, where you can, there's a lot of information there, including information about your intensive workshops and assessment and coaching services. Dr. Harkness, I just love the unique emphasis you place on not letting aging trip people up and on getting in touch with the authentic self rather than skipping the steps and jumping right into match.com kind of thinking. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom on aging and on careers.
Well, I tell people, I am a teacher. I am a teacher, and I don't teach in a traditional setting. I don't teach in a university setting. I have my own company, but I still am a teacher. And these are the things that I think people, to move forward and be successful, the system that I have developed is a system that works. It's worked with for 30 years with hundreds of people. And I'm very serious about it. If it doesn't work one way, I'll find the way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
If they'll stick with me, we'll find a way.
I believe you.
I won't let them. One of the things I do, I have a library that I know is unique. I bring people in, and for 30 years I have brought people in to talk about careers, either my former clients or people, you know, that I pay to come in, and they talk about the career subject, and it's open to the community, and my clients, anybody can come and sit in, and we tape. 30 years we have taped these. I have now, at this point, at least 700 tapes. Originally they were videos, and now we've had to make DVDs out of all of them. And some of them are out of date, but some of them are not. Even though they're 15 years old, they're right in track. But I loan these out to people. They're not for sale. They're research. We let them check it out and listen to them. That is a resource, because I am not an authority on every career, but I do know how to find tap people who are authorities.
Mm-hmm.
I do know how to get the right person in to talk about a subject. And I also am very good at judging whether or not they are for real or for their fakes. We're very careful about bringing fake, false promises in. People don't need that right now.
They never did. Commentary. What can we say about Dr. Harkness? There are plenty of motivational speakers and coaches that tell us, follow your bliss and the money will come, or build it and they will come. A lot of people have done that and are floundering and broke. As with most processes, if there is a missing link, the whole thing doesn't work. Dr. Harkness advocates identifying your bliss, but then matching it with market needs and what the market will pay for, and making sure you have and are willing to use the skills that the market requires. Her book, Don't Stop the Career Clock, does the best job, in my mind, of walking you through the process and does a great job of challenging ageist assumptions and limitations. Her newest book, Capitalizing on Career Chaos, is primarily focused on helping people who are stuck in defining their authentic self or who have self-defeating limitations. Personally, I think a good psychologist who is familiar with the job markets can usually nail a person's authentic self in an hour or two of interviewing and point to what careers and types of jobs fit with those traits and values. Then comes identifying any weakness in either job skills or job-seeking skills. Often the most difficult part is developing the Rolodex or making the connections with employers or mentors. Needless to say, knowing which part of the process you need the most help with is key in deciding what kind of help to seek. The rule of thumb is that the more you're taking on a totally new direction, the more vital it is to get some help. Also, if you find that you're spinning your wheels or feeling clueless or stuck, it's time to get some help. You know how when you listen to commercials or political advertisements, you have a jaded ear and you're listening to sort out the crap? Dr. Harkness and I independently came to the conclusion that we need to call ageist myths and thinking what they are: crap. And have crap detectors to protect us from the toxic effects of those endemic ageist thinking in our culture. I find it very refreshing to hear someone who's done her homework and who otherwise is very well-mannered call that ageist thinking and those ageist myths crap. If you want to know what's in my crap detector and my latest thinking on how to think, feel, look, and be more youthful, sign up for my free online newsletter, the Defy Aging Newsletter. You can sign up through my portal site, notaging.com, notaging.com, or my general site, drbricky.com, that's drbricky.com. Emails, I love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com, that's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. On our last program with Eric Weiner on Where's the Happiest Country in the World, we got a lot of responses of, Iceland, Switzerland, you gotta be kidding me. Iceland is so bleak and Switzerland is so boring. Come on now. Well, at 29%, vanilla is the most popular flavor of ice cream. A lot of people seem to like the ordinary, and people seem to thrive and come together when there's some kind of adversity, like very cold climates. I think the issue about where the happiest place in the world is a very complex mix of genetic proclivities, whether you love where you are or you feel trapped there, and the values you develop. One person's Shangri-La is another person's Devil's Island. And as we saw in the movie Groundhog Day, some people can even change and come to love a place they originally regarded as boring and hick. One of the most profound conclusions, I think, that Eric Weiner reached was that while Americans focus on what's going on in our minds and hearts, the key to happiness appears to be more about relationships, both with people and with the environment and the culture. I'd love to hear your feedback on the show with Dr. Harkness or any other shows. Just send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. A reminder for information on my free Defy Aging newsletter, my speaking services, my books, my hypnosis CDs, just go to notaging.com, that's notaging.com. This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. I look forward to being with you on our show next week in our continuing quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.